Indeed. Hi, everybody. I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is the Concept Crucible Podcast.
And today we're going to talk about something that just... I thought about it the other day.
Like, for the first time?
Not necessarily for the first time. But every time I think about it, it just blows my mind, just the concept of it.
And eating that, souls.
Well, I'm trying to cut back. You know, I'm trying to lose weight and stuff.
Okay.
But... No. But we can link to both Hank and John talking about it in various... they have two different YouTube videos that inspired this a little bit. But just the thought of public education as a concept. The idea that people... Children are people. But I don't want to conflate it with adults when I say people. But... where youth go to a place that's subsidized and paid for, where they get to learn stuff for like 6 to 8 hours a day, and then may or may not have extracurriculars, co-curriculars, and whatnot. Like, just when you think about it, just for everything else that we experience in our lives and that we pay for or that we have to, you know, work to bring about. This is something, at least, and obviously this is going to be heavily, this is going to all be about in our experiences in Canada, in Ontario kind of deal. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about stateside, but there's not really an appreciable difference in terms of the idea of public education between Canada and the States for a child going to school. Curriculum might be different, funding might be different, but otherwise, mm-hmm. like, still the idea that you go to public school or you have a publicly... funded education available to you that's compulsory. Sure, it's compulsory, but just a concept, public education, just amazing to me. But I'm kind of nerdy like that. I like being in school, and my parents threatened that if I were to become a career student that would be very bad and have very bad consequences for their support.
Yes, it would.
So be damned. I love the idea of going to school and public education. It's awesome. Especially once you enter the workforce and you're like, I just want to go back and do school.
I'm the total opposite. I do not miss being in university one bit. I like the time it affords. I like my job, but also I like the notion that when I leave my job, I can more or less put it down. You know, I can sort of keep an eye on it, but, you know, let it it simmers. But I'm sort of free to do the things that I want to do, like podcasts. Whereas with the university, I found that it was like, whenever I was doing anything else, I could always have been writing papers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a sort of consistent present thing. But there's a lot of things, like I don't enjoy being constantly evaluated. I do think that public education is extraordinarily invaluable.
Yeah.
For that matter, Icebreaker, who is your favorite teacher?
Have to say,
specifically when we talk about public education in context, what we mean is like primary and secondary education, not right. University or college, which is post-secondary, which, while partly publicly funded, also requires people to pay, and more importantly, it is designed mostly to educate people who are mostly adults and not children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
but yeah, favorite teacher, go.
I would say it'd have to be Mr. Steffler,
who I believe you talked about in the Philosophy Stories podcast.
I believe so. Yeah, he was integral to my philosophical story, or my story about my history with philosophy. Anyways. Mr. Steffler was my grade 11 writer's craft teacher. He was also the head of the English department, taught lit studies, taught various core English courses, you know, 9 through 12 at various times. Also ran a remedial, but it was kind of like a remedial class. It's just a session where kids who were having problems with the LP could get more practice in the elements that they needed help with. And it was an actual class. It wasn't like a after school program. It was a class specifically devoted to the people who required a little bit of extra coaching to help them mm-hmm. with the concepts in the LPs, which were the standardized English examinations. So anyways, yeah, Mr. Steffler, I took his writer's craft course and did really well, you know, mid-80s, and loved it so much I took it a second time. And when I tried to take it, my guidance counselor was like, "Are you trying to improve the grade?" Like, no, I just really liked it. I really liked his style. He was the kind of teacher, I don't know, maybe he was aspiring to some sort of Dead Poets Society thing. He would walk into a class, write a poem on the board silently. He wouldn't say anything to us. Just come in, start writing a poem on the board, turn around, and then just say respond and give us 10 minutes to respond to it in some way anyway. So you could write a poem in response. You could critique the poem. Usually he preferred it when it was some sort of poetic response or some sort of creative response. I mean, it was a writer's craft course. It wasn't a lit crit or critical theory course kind of deal. Mm-hmm. He was that kind of teacher, and he did things with the English language that I didn't know you could do in terms of opening up meaning and symbolism and allusions to other texts. He introduced me to the concept of hypertextuality. Mm-hmm. And actually he wanted to go back and finish his master's thesis in hypertextuality in terms of like literature hypertexting through the work, and that was what ended up giving me or setting me in the direction that, you know what, like, I don't have to go down the hard sciences. There is something interesting that can be explored through English, and then eventually for me philosophy. So he was my favorite teacher. Scared the hell out of me, because sometimes I couldn't tell if he was angry with us or if he was trolling us when he was being stern and serious. But yeah, he's my favorite teacher. And Jim, who was your favorite teacher?
Oh man, I was not a good student in school. I got thrown out of high school like 3 times, mostly for not showing up to class. But yeah, as I think back over favorite teachers, mine are also all like basically all English teachers. Mr. Thompson was a great science teacher, but I didn't start really being cool with him until. Because I was busy being a high school jerk kid, until I met him when I was outside of high school. He used to shop in my convenience store all the time because he lived in the neighborhood and he was retired, and it was a super good time. But no, I mean, I didn't have a chance to get to know a lot of teachers because I was so busy getting kicked out of school. I did have a couple of really good English teachers, Mr. Puidas, who is a Finnish Canadian guy from like. Northern Ontario, Northern Quebec, somewhere around there. And I just remember him as being this guy of quiet intensity that I really wanted to take seriously, which is usually exactly when he would crack a joke. But probably Mr. Fisher. And it wasn't even he was my 7th grade English teacher. And that was the first time that I'd ever had like multiple classes where we had to like run around and have a schedule and manage a locker and all the kinds of other crap, because we were in junior high and apparently that's what you do in junior high. But he gave us an assignment once where it was like one of those sort of stupid unit assignments where it's like, here's 30 different activities you could do. They're vaguely English related. Make a cover in pencil crayon. Do 7 of them. Hand them in. Please, God. And I don't know, and it was all about sort of introspection. And I was a quietly introspective child who grew up into a loud introspective adult. And one of the sections was on questioning me, it was called. And it was like, you know, ask questions and try and think about the answers. And a lot of people, we did a bit of peer review, and I got a chance to look at people's questions, and a lot of people had just like sent in a list of questions for that, and like questions like 1 through 3 on everybody's sheet was invariably, why do I have to go to school, which I thought was really stupid even at the time, because there are tons of great reasons why you have to go to school. For one thing, what would you do at home all day? I didn't have television. I knew about it, but I didn't have it. But mine was, I wrote this tiny little paper, like 3 paragraphs on why do I have feelings and why are they confusing? And why do I think about stuff in the way that I do? And he really liked it. And we had a long talk about it once. I believe my guidance counselor was involved. The brief paragraphs included a Descartes quote. the cogito ergo sum, that Descartes never actually said,
yeah,
or wrote anywhere, but everybody quotes him for. Because I mean, like, if I am the sum of my thoughts, and my thoughts are really confusing, then what does that make me? I had read that quote not in Descartes, but in a Bruce Coville book about kids solving mysteries very recently at the time, and thought it would be a good thing to include because it was a thing that I was thinking about. And he delighted in it, probably because he's like, "How on earth do you know who Descartes is? You're 12." But yeah, we had this sort of long. It was the first time I had ever had an adult. I think it was the first time I'd ever written something that felt real. And it was the first time I'd ever had an adult treat something that I had read like it was real. Or treat something that I had written, rather, like it was real. He wasn't, when he wanted to talk about it, he wasn't just trying to, you know, talk about the grade or tell me that it was a really good paper or something like that. Paper is the wrong word, but a really good, you know, assignment. He was trying to help me negotiate the opacity of the world and the distance that I felt from me to other people, which didn't work very well, partly because I wasn't super receptive to it. But as an adult, I look back and I recognize that, and I'm like, here is a human being who, when I was really, really uncertain and frightened and nervous and expressed that in writing, he read it, and he didn't just grade it, he really read it. And that was super cool. I've had a lot of great teachers, but in school, I'm not one of those people who can blame their lack of success in secondary or in high school on bad teachers. I had great teachers. I was just a jerk and didn't go to class. Also, if you were a kid and you were listening to this, go to class.
I have to say, my failures in secondary school was not because I was a jerk, but because I got really lazy. And that's why
I knew that too.
That's because I didn't. That was the reason why I didn't become an engineer. Actually, was because my grades in the maths and sciences started to slip.
That seems reasonable. I mean, to be fair, if you are a philosopher and you are lazy, you take more naps and get less done. If you are an engineer and you are lazy, people could die.
Yeah, it reminds me of a joke that somebody mentioned about, you know, being a foot off and something else. Nobody really cares, but being a foot off an engineer and bridges fall down.
Yeah.
And they have iron rings to commemorate, the wrong word, but to remind themselves of,
yeah, of the sort of responsibility you get.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is our favorite teacher icebreaker. Yeah, our school background is pretty similar. I think we both went to mostly Canadian public schools.
Yep. I did a 2-year stint stateside, 1 year in Kansas for the 6th grade,
mm-hmm.
and 1 year in Texas for 7th grade, and then I returned back to Ontario for 8 all the way up.
Nice.
So
Ryan graduated with reasonable distinction, I believe, with a victory lap.
Yeah, I just was not ready to enter the real world, as it were, which is the exact same answer I gave for why I went into grad school.
It is.
But I hit grade 12 and I still did not have a real grasp of what I was going to move on to. And I wasn't ready to move on. So I started my victory lap, my OAC grade 13 year. And I got through the first semester, it would have been. I got through the first semester and realized I had outgrown high school and I was ready to move on. And then the second semester was terrible because I felt completely confined. I think by that point I'd already received my acceptance from UW and I accepted it kind of deal. So now it was just marking time before leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, I still went to school. I didn't drop out for the second semester, but it was just, I distinctly remember the feeling that the pond was no longer as large as I thought it was. Like, I had outgrown that pond. I was ready to move on from high school in the second semester, but I didn't feel that in the first semester of my victory lap.
So I am basically the opposite. I never finished high school. I have a GED, a general education diploma, that I got when I was about 23. is I was working in a bunch of places, and I saved up, and I was like, okay, I have just enough money to write my GED and like get to, it was out of town, so I had to go out of town with no car. So I remember I spent the night in a Tim Hortons reading Moby Dick and wrote my GED. And I remember the first day joking about how easy it was. It was really easy for me. It turns out I am not stupid. And I joked about it the first day, and then I realized on the second day that a lot of people were still really nervous about it. And despite the fact that it was really easy for me, it was really challenging for them, and it was a thing that was really making them nervous. And that is why I found it so easy, is because it is not designed to like be a crucible that you pass through that is difficult. It is designed to give you a certification that you need in order to move on to the things that you, the other things you need to do. I mean, it would be years until I actually went to university, I think, but that was I got tossed out three times, mostly for not going to class. Once because I was going to job interviews because I needed to pay bills, and once because of sedition, which is a charge I do not comprehend how it could happen in high school, but that was what was on my paperwork, so that's what we're going with. But yeah, it was a thing. I regret some of those decisions, but at the same time, they necessarily contribute to the human being that I am, so I can't really get that mad. Mm-hmm. I can get pretty mad, actually, but I can't go back and change them without risking everything and also owning a time machine.
Yep. Unless I'm doing the very thing
that would make me want to go and change them. Yes.
Paradoxes. This is Rush.
But that is my school background. It's remarkably different.
Sonic screwdriver.
I also failed the seventh grade.
Yeah.
Yes. That seventh grade where Mr. Fisher was my English teacher, despite his best efforts, I did very little and gave no effort in many of my other classes, and I failed. And the school was gracious enough to let me do grade 7 and grade 8 in 1 year as long as I kept my marks up, which I did because it turns out I wasn't stupid. I was just lazy and I didn't like things. I was also diagnosed with depression, which was great. The treatment for which, by the way, as for 12-year-old Jim, was small doses of antidepressants and karate, which worked remarkably well. I had a really good sensei. But, yeah, I mean, so our school background is different, but I think we're both greatly appreciative of public education because I would presumably be in jail. And Ryan would probably be the same person, only a farmer.
Something like that, yeah. Something useful, I suppose, as compared to what I sometimes think of myself as doing.
Yeah. I mean, you have given a lovely talk about the lofty ideals of public education as an investment in the future of the youth of our nations.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, There's the kind of party line that gets touted nowadays in the modern economy that education is ultimately in service of jobs, which, okay, that's a necessary evil of the situation in which we find ourselves, but it's not the one that inspires the awe in me, as opposed to, and I will fully admit, like, this is kind of an ideal or a fictionalized historical view of things that's probably very far from reality. But when I think of public education, when I kind of hold the concept in my mind, it serves to create the future innovators, the future movers and shakers, which will shape the world in which we will progress towards. And then eventually when I die, and you know, it's like the future that will keep going forward. Like, that's just an awesome concept to me. You know, the astronauts and the people exploring, or there's still areas of our planet that we still haven't explored. Yep. You know, so I mean, just the exploration, being able to do new cool things with technology, being able to eliminate previous problems that, you know, had held us back for you know, practical, economical reasons, you know, like food, you know. Now, imagine, you know, the innovation that will go into perhaps one day solving food problems. Again, like, it's an idealized thing because, you know, obviously human interests are going to get in the way and greed is going to get in the way and, you know, intellectual property in some sense will get in the way. You know, like the laws and stuff can get in the way of these ideals. But it still, like, fills me with a sense of awe. And then the other side of it is just this kind of quasi-historical, probably not true, but the idea laid down, say, in the with the, how the American educational system was conceived. You know, the idea of educating the demos, educating the people to be able to make informed decisions, to not just self-govern, but self-direct themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want a stupid, uninformed populace, which, you know, you might have opinions of people nowadays being that way, but, you know, having the ability to access public libraries, which I think I've ranted about before, the concept of a public library is amazing. Just this building with books that, as long as you have an address, I guess, or somewhere, you know, you can sign up for a card. You know, the Pagemaster style thing, that's a magic, you know, access into this world that, you know, yep, unlimited.
I don't even think you need an address.
No, I don't. Yeah, now that I think about it, you probably don't even need to.
No.
You just need, like, what, one piece of ID?
Yeah.
Or something like that. Anyways, so there's one hurdle that you'd have to cross over and have a piece of ID. But, you know, that concept is amazing. And so public education, just this idea that it is a fully subsidized,
those were air quotes,
yeah, air quotes for those listening, thing that children and young adults can go to enrich their minds, to interact socially, to make mistakes, learn things about themselves, learn things about the world, figure things out, as well as, you know, receiving information. They can also figure it out from themselves. It's just an amazing concept. This is an amazing concept to me. I don't know why necessarily. It just blows my mind.
So in the pre-show, we learned that Ryan's experiences with public education have been reasonably idyllic, as you can no doubt tell. I share many of those ideas, but I am not awed by them. The thing that I love about public education is what it does to human beings. I mean, it sort of, the practice of public education sort of fundamentally alters you and sets up your social dynamics and things like that. I mean, that's why it's so different from culture to culture. But in the sense that it is really easy to be an adult who never reads Emily Dickinson or Jane Austen or, you know, Moby Dick, who is not an author. That is the title of a book. Mm-hmm. Just in case you are one of those adults.
Melville.
You're cool. Yeah, Herman Melville. Good book. But it is really easy to be an adult who's never done that. It is harder now with the internet, but even still, it is pretty easy to be an adult who does not read those things, or who does not interact with, you know, history, even 20th century history, you know, the First World War, the Second World War, the Great Depression, you know, with ancient history, with other languages, with complex mathematics. It is easy to be an adult and never, ever interact with these things. Is in fact the most often thing that I find complained about when with regard to public education on the internet is, now that I'm an adult, I don't ever interact with these things anymore. Why did I learn these? Because when you were a kid, you might fucking want to. And the only way for you to learn that is to interact with them briefly, is to read great books and great poems and listen to great music and learn history and, though, spend time with other languages and spend time with the sciences. And yes, a bunch of that stuff you're gonna at best hate, or not care about, and at worst, I guess, hate. But if you are going to be a person who really likes it, it is important that you have the opportunity to like it. I'm okay with a world where there are lots and lots of adults who don't read Emily Dickinson. As long as that is a world where there are very few adults who have never read Emily Dickinson or similar poets, or, you know, studied other cultures or other languages. Like, it is one thing to look at a thing, see what it is, and walk away from it. Because you got to make a choice about that. You got to decide that history wasn't a thing you cared about. You got to decide that French was not a language for you. If you never got exposed to that, then you never got to pick. You don't know if French is not the language for you because you never, like forget never even trying, you never even saw it. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know about whether or not you would like to play an instrument or sing in a choir or play on a sports team or anything like that if we didn't give you these opportunities. The thing I like about public education is no matter how badly it does this, it, like, in execution, it is, you know, let's call it fair to middling. Mm-hmm. But it tries to give children as many of these opportunities as it can over the course of, like, 14 or 15 years so they can try and figure out the people they're going to be. That is why the dominant concept of school is what you're going to be when you grow up. You know, you are one day going to leave this place where we enforce all of this variety and diversity and breadth on you, and you need to decide what kind of person you're going to be. Are you going to be a person who wants to do all of this? Are you going to be a person who wants to do some of it? Are you going to be a person who wants to do nothing with it and just forget all of it? I mean, all of those are valid kinds of people. There's a huge spectrum of those people. But if you never got that chance, then you only get to be one of those people. Mm-hmm. The one who gets nothing at all. I mean, that to me is the cool thing about public education. And it is also the sucky thing, because it means you wind up doing a bunch of stuff that you don't care about or even like. My nieces are in that phase right now, and they're only in, like, Gwen's in the fifth grade. And she's like, I hate school. And Alice is like, I hate school too, because Alice hates whatever Gwen hates, usually. Also, Alice might also hate school. They're in that I hate school phase, because school for them is a burden. It's a thing that they do when they're not playing, and they're, like, it's the thing that happens in between recess. And I remember talking to them and saying, hey, do you guys argue a lot? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, do you guys like being right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, guess what? If you don't stay in school, welcome to the universe of being wrong all the time. I still haven't made them like school. But, I mean, they're learning things that they do like, mm-hmm, in school. And they're learning to do those things. And they're learning to do them with other people. And they're learning to do them alone. They're learning to do them with supervision. Like, they're learning how to exist in power structures, as weird and problematic as those power structures can get. All of that stuff excites me about public education. That is the thing that matters, is that we have tried to give people a chance, and all we can do with that is try harder. Mm-hmm. I would love to live in a nation that is full of people who want to embrace the breadth and diversity of topics in history and science and engineering, and I would love to be one of those people too. I like it, but I am a dabbler, and I would like to know more, and I would like to work harder at it. And I would love to live in a country of people like that. I'm okay with not living that in that way, as long as, I mean, they had a really good opportunity to make a choice. Also, school makes people, I don't want to say more complete, but happy. I mean, in the long run, mm-hmm, that is... What do you want to be when you grow up? Happy. Whole. You know? seems legit. The other cool thing about school is that it assaults you with a whole bunch of problems for you to solve.
Yeah, that was you posed it in a really interesting way in the pre-show, and I like that. I like the concept of it because it also dovetails, and we'll probably link it over my face when Hank Green gave a discussion.
That is where I link stuff.
Yep. When he talks about education as giving you tools for problem solving, I like the way you framed it this way: of public education is where we give you 12 to 13 years of problems in this incredibly wide variety yep. of sub-disciplines. So not just the sciences, not just history, perhaps philosophy. I like when you're like the maths, the advanced maths, the advanced maths, then calculus, which is the advanced math. Like it was, I quite enjoyed that. But I like that idea. And I often challenge, there's a meme that floats around every once in a while of like, why did I have to study algebra? And that was one of the things that kind of inspired my thinking, in addition to the two Green Brothers education YouTube videos from their Vlogbrothers channel. Mm-hmm. But it's the idea that, I don't use algebra. And it's like, I call bullshit on that, because if you're sitting there trying to figure out what time you should get ready, if you're going to be driving somewhere, you're doing algebra. You're yep. solving essentially for X.
For a variable.
You're solving for a variable. I mean, you would be more efficient probably if you'd written it down as an algebraic formula than just trying to ballpark it in your head. Okay. But it's not necessary. It's not necessary.
So Ryan, I leave work at 4:30 and it takes me an hour to walk home. And my girlfriend leaves work at a different location at 4:45. It takes her half an hour to walk home and our routes cross. But where do we cross?
No, I know. We can make light of it.
No, but you are absolutely right.
But, I mean, like, I call bullshit on stuff like that. I mean, you know what? You may not be using calculus for the job in which you get paid for. You may not be using calculus in order to live your day-to-day lives. That's granted. What is so amazing about public education, or just education in general, is that you are given exposure to problems, which starts to build a toolbox of tools in which you can then go to solve unique problems in the future. Mm-hmm. So this is like where people tend to be like, well, Shakespeare is not important. Like, okay, I can grant math is going to be important, right? You can see some sort of utility of math in the real world or science or whatever, but Shakespeare, obviously not. And I call bullshit on that too. I mean, it's not going to help you. I don't know. It's not going to help you in physics, but understanding the kind of connection between the characters, what the story is ultimately about, can help you relate with other people.
Yeah.
It can help you understand stories. It can help you understand plots. It can help you understand, you know, hubris and why characters fall or why characters are triumphant. You can see where, you know, just traits make people utterly crap. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, you're going to have to do a little bit of work. You're going to have to exert some mental sweat in order to get something out of it. It's not going to give you the answers by reading it. I mean, most of the time when you are exposed to Shakespeare, you have to decode the written word in order to understand what's going on. You often need the guidance of a teacher to help you. I'm not saying that Shakespeare is supposed to be transparent in that regard, but when you start to actually exert that mental sweat and you build those tools to be able to understand it, it gives you access into understanding how other people are. And then you can put yourself into their shoes and you can understand the world from their point of view, or you can use it as a framing device to approach situations. So education exposes you to these problems and it gives you a wider variety of tools. So you know what? I don't remember a lot of algebra, or I don't remember a lot of my computer programming stuff, but you know what? I learned a little bit of logic. Now I'm going to use an example from university. I learned a little bit about logic in university, but that was only, I could only do that because I was exposed to logical operators in my computer engineering course in high school. And then later on at my job at the gambling lab, when I had to salvage a, a study because our simulator went wrong for half a day, and I had to figure out why. I had to use my experience with Boolean logic operators, which helped me understand formal logic, which helped me to read the syntax of a computer code to be able to understand it enough to find the specific outputs in the simulator that allowed me to save data. So we didn't have to scrap the entire day's worth of data, like 19 or 20 participants.
Yeah.
We could only exclude the 4 or 5 people that went on the one specific simulator. Now, that's an example I'm stitching together as a really nice example. But the point I'm trying to drive is that you never know what tools are going to be useful. And you never know what tools are going to be able to be adapted to other things. I mean, the idea of, like, when you have a hammer, all
everything
problems
looks
are
like a nail
kind of deal like that. But, you know, that kind of misses the other side, that hammers are useful for other things as well. I mean, it's not as...
You could build a house or crack a skull.
I know. It's perhaps a flawed metaphor. I'm reaching a little bit too far. But it gives you ways of approaching problems from new angles. And it allows you to reason analogically as well as logically. You can approach a problem indirectly from another point of view simply by being exposed to something else in another field. I mean, that's a lot of times how a lot of innovations start. It's some sort of, you know, metaphorical conceptual breakthrough that allows them to then, okay, I have this as a framework, let me go back now and try to make it work for the, you know, the science of it, you know.
I also like that some of the problems are artificially created by the school. I use the example of random assholes. You put a whole bunch of people in a room and the only thing they have in common is like the vague location where they live, mm-hmm. and the year that they were born. You're going to get a reasonably random selection of humanity in this room. You're going to get people from different cultures. You're going to get people from, you know, who are, you know, first, second generation, you know, et cetera. You're going to get people who speak different languages. You are going, I mean, this is, I say this as having lived in like city center for most of my life. So the area around here is pretty diverse, but what you're going to get is sort of a sampling of the area that you are in. I definitely know people who went to school, you know, out in the country or in other areas of the city where like everyone is white, which seems a little unfortunate, but what are you going to do when you've got like, no one else is in control of that.
No.
The nice thing about it for school officials and things like that is they don't have to like vet people to put them in classes together. And sometimes you sort of tweak that a bit, but you know, you always wind up with this random selection of kids who are going to present different problems to each other and different social problems and things like that. And I like, speaking as someone who was terrible at negotiating those kinds of things, like just often paralyzed with fear, I do not want to say that they were the best days of my life, because they were certainly not, but I appreciate some of the things that at the very least I could have learned from that and could have carried forward sooner had I been ready. And they are only things that I could learn from unfettered access to the human race. Like I needed to it to be unmediated by, you know, authority figures or parents or whoever. I needed to learn what it was like to interact with real random people, because that is what basically the rest of my life is like. I mean, you can't always hang out with your friends all the time. Sometimes you're going to interact with people and they might be jerks, and maybe it's because they're jerks, maybe it's because they're having a really bad day, or maybe it's because you have no way of knowing, you have no insight into that unless you get some, and you just sort of got to figure out how to handle that. And that is a thing that hopefully we learn at young ages, because it is going to be a reality. If we sort of mediate kids' contact constantly, then I think it gets harder to learn. As somebody for whom it was already very difficult to learn, I don't know that I would have been rewarded by that. So yeah, the random social selection seems stupid. And probably, like, there's definitely better ways to organize social dynamics, but A, that would take a lot more work, and B, you know, the randomness of it is sort of, like, the crapshoot nature is part of its virtue, because it gets you a complete crapshoot, which is much like getting a job somewhere. I mean, not always. I mean, you often sort of, you want to try and find a company that, or a business that fits your values and things like that.
Right.
And so, but you're going to have a few things, and you're going to have things in common. You will definitely have more things in common with people at your work usually than with people that you went to school with. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you were at least in the same line of work.
Yep.
But there's something to be said for just like being able to interact with random pieces of humanity. And being able to recognize their needs and being able to recognize them as different people. And yeah, it is a thing that I'm not gonna like toot the schools develop social skills horn too loudly, but it is a thing that is often valuable, but also occasionally deeply unfortunate. I mean, that is where you get instances of bullying and harassment and you know, suicides, and there are definitely, I don't want to refer to suicides as kinks,
no,
because that seems horrible, like as in like a kinks in a plan. I think that seems horrible, but there are I also don't want to use the word inevitable,
no,
but there are deep flaws in that kind of organization. That stretch back, like that stretch through our culture, because the reason why kids do that is because they learned it from us and from our media and from our things. They are living in the world that was built for them. But yeah, I also like C students. We'll do a separate video about that. I love C students.
Yeah, we also didn't get a chance, and we should probably allude to this for a future video. I really liked our discussion about why teaching budgets and teaching voting is such a hard issue to
next,
do
in a school setting. No. Next season. That's for next season.
Well,
that's
we can our do school, that next season.
That's our school talk for next season. Yeah. Don't foreshadow. Don't foreshadow. Now you're committed to us.
Okay, maybe not. No, not next episode. But that, you know what?
No, next season. Next season.
But just beware. There's a conversation coming. It is really interesting on why the idea of why didn't I learn how to budget? Why didn't I learn how to vote in school? Why that is such a hard question to answer.
Also, if you want to know why you, some of those things, why you didn't learn them, go back and read and watch or listen to our skills podcast,
mm-hmm.
where we talked about the difference between something that is useful and something that is important. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't learn astrophysics because it's useful. We don't study astrophysics because it's like, you know, or astronomy because it's immediately useful. The Hubble Space Telescope doesn't take pictures of things and transmit them to Earth because we're like, wow, now we're going to build a car with these pictures. It takes pictures of those things and sends them back to the Earth, not because they're useful, but because they matter.
Mm.
Because they tell us things about the universe that we live in.
Mm.
Things that are awesome. Speaking of awesome, I'm Jim.
And I'm Ryan.
And we're signing off.
Stay awesome. But you know what? I like the fact that we've actually, for the first time, set up a topic in the future.
Oh God, really? Because that terrifies me.
Well, I mean, it terrifies me too, but it's also kind of exciting. We're evolving as a podcast.
Well, yeah.